Hello and a very warm welcome along to the Cheltenham Festival 2024 review. My name is Tom Nugent, in the company of Rory DeLargy and Ruby Walsh, as we reprise our roles of the Cheltenham Countdown Series to look back at the festival that was the greatest show on turf, indeed, has unfolded just last week, and we'll be looking back at all the highlights and possibly some even lowlights as well to bring you through. Before we begin, a quick reminder that if you're listening to this as a podcast, that's also available in video format on the Paddy Power Racing YouTube channel. Head over there and make sure you're subscribed, as there's lots more racing content coming on that platform as we go through Aintree and Punchestown, and indeed into the flat season. The turf season is very much upon us, with the Curragh getting underway yesterday as we record on Tuesday. Bank Holiday Monday was the first meeting at the Curragh. And also a reminder that if you're having a bet this week, or indeed any week, always remember to do so responsibly. Gents, how are we? Okay?
Grant.
Tired?
No, back on the bridle.
No, back. Yeah. Okay, travelling. Okay, good. Ruby, last week, did you enjoy it, firstly?
I did. I enjoyed it from start to finish, but how am I going to knock myself here? I love it. And I guess there was enough of negativity and enough complaints and enough of people moaning, but I thought it was wonderful. I thought Cheltenham doesn't deliver magic 7 races a day, 4 days of the year, 4 days of the week. It never did. It was never going to. But I thought it delivered enough of magic.
Do you think expectations have got out of hand now because we're talking about it for so long?
Ah, no, the world has changed, Tom. It's very easy to create a negative or a positive vibe about one thing or another. You just have to use social media. And enough of people have managed to create a negative vibe, but look, it's whether you choose to listen to it or choose to have your own opinion.
Okay. Independent-minded, we must remain, Rory DeLargy. You were watching from afar. What did you make of it?
Well, obviously, it's the atmosphere is very different when you're several thousand miles away, and it's Ramadan in Riyadh. But it took a wee while to warm up for me. But then again, you know, because I'm not getting the real atmosphere, I'm getting the social media comments more than anything else. So, but I thought Wednesday was very good, and I thought it maintained things from there. It just seemed a slightly low-key start, but I thought I enjoyed it from Wednesday onwards, some more than others. Captain Guinness was very enjoyable. That helps kick things off a wee bit, you know.
Okay. That's the way it goes. I mean, you got enough people who backed the favourite in the first or got in on the Gaelic Warrior in the second. It just changes opinion. It changes people's mindset. Same happened at the Dublin Racing Festival. Wrong 3 horses win the first 3 races. People can't get a drink. And all of a sudden, it's the worst show on earth. Right 3 horses win the first 3 races. No one minds how long the queue is, and this is just fabulous. But that's how easy it is to influence people.
Exactly.
Hey, a general election was influenced in America. It's not that difficult.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look at the DRF last year. You couldn't have had a meeting that got more approval. Everybody absolutely loved it. It was terrific. There were very few complaints about anything. And, you know, you get all the right results. Everyone thought it was tremendous. And then, you know, you just start on a slightly lower note, and everyone's suddenly looking at the dark side, aren't they?
Clock the place down. Yeah. Shut the door. Everyone go home.
So there's too many spin doctors out there. We're listening to too many different people. They're trying to influence our opinions.
Form your own opinion. My God.
Okay, well, I'd be interested to hear your own opinion, because there were some talking points, and I know you were leaning into the people were too negative, Ruby. But Rory, attendances got a lot of airtime at the festival. Obviously, you weren't there, but what do you make of the numbers that we had? In terms of obviously a slight decline on 2023.
Yeah, the issue they have, it seems, is Tuesday's always going to get a good crowd, and our proper racing crowd, and the atmosphere is terrific. Friday's always going to get a huge crowd, slightly different crowd, but it's always going to be sold out.
A very different crowd. I know that now, walking in and coming out, was a very different crowd on Friday.
Yeah, and it's a slightly. I don't love the atmosphere on the Friday. It feels much more of a drinking festival than a racing festival the time you get to Gold Cup Day. But as far as the track's concerned, that's grand for them. They're getting the money out of it. Maximum crowd. Wednesday needs work. But again, you know, if they're going to call it Style Wednesday, they're almost admitting that they find it a struggle to sell the racing. So maybe you need to move races around a wee bit. And it's a race that, it's a day that doesn't appeal to all the traditionalists. You've got the cross-country chase, which is something that tends to split the audience, particularly in the UK. And you've got the bumper, similarly. Those are two popular races in Ireland, always have been. They're races that bumpers, you know, used to be the race everyone thought was an opportunity to leave the track early and get out before the traffic gets bad. And cross-country racing hasn't been a thing in the UK until the last 15 odd years. So those are two races on the day that maybe don't sell to a UK crowd. You can either keep the programme as it is and make it cheaper. It's the same price on Wednesday as it is on Tuesday and Thursday. And if you want to get more people there, it's not difficult to attract them with by taking a tenner off the price. 86 quid now. If you wanted, I got an email, you know, on Monday morning saying tickets on sale for next year with a big sign saying high demand for Wednesday. Well, maybe there isn't such a high demand for Wednesday. So it's not difficult to make a little bit of a push to sell those tickets early so that they don't have the problem they did close to the festival. And they were still emailing people the week before trying to sell tickets for Wednesday. And it's not rocket science, is it?
Ruby, are the Jockeys Club hamstrung a little bit? Because a couple of years ago we were hearing, the crowds are too big, so it turns into a supply and demand issue. They raise the prices to try and maybe meet their kind of threshold, and maybe they're anticipating a little downfall, and all of a sudden it becomes maybe slightly more less packed. Customer experience
possibly,
is maybe a little bit harder. It's hard to know what to do, isn't it?
It's not definitely not my forte anyway. Mm. And 70,000 is capacity now, and I thought it was 68, but there was 69 something there on Friday. So
I'm going there's actually bigger capacity in Gold Cup Day than there is in the first 3 days.
All right,
for whatever reason.
Yeah. Are they slightly hamstrung? I think they are, and slightly more hamstring in that when you look at Cheltenham, the facility, and you look at how much infrastructure there is that's temporary, tent villages, shopping villages, you look at the amount of staff that are there, the costs of it, I would say Cheltenham has to be 4 days to turn a profit. I'd say at 3 days, yeah. When you look at the size of it and the volume of people that are just working there, I would say that 4 days is what it has to be for a profit for Jockey Club race courses. I don't think it could afford to go to 3 days. And is it slightly hamstrung in its pricing? I don't know. It's where did the drop-off come? Mm. And I would imagine with the way the economy is, especially in the UK, I mean, you only had to come back through Birmingham Airport on Friday or Thursday night to realise that there's lots of crises in the UK as regards roads, rail, airports. England is not booming. So I would say when you look at the cost of it, yes, for people middle and further down, it probably was too expensive. And I would imagine that is where the biggest hit came on tickets. I could be wrong, but yeah. I'm just guessing. Mm.
And the ticket prices themselves are not the biggest problem for people. Anyone who wants to go there for more than one day, you've got to stay somewhere. And Cheltenham just isn't quite big enough for the festival, is it? I mean,
Cheltenham Town.
Cheltenham has lots of little festivals, and it does really well as a festival town, and it's really important for the local economy. But when the Cheltenham festival has become so big, the infrastructure of the town just struggles to hold that many people. So hotel rooms are at a premium. I stayed on the Sunday night last year in a middle of the road hotel, nice enough place, 89 quid on the Sunday night. The Monday night, if I wanted to stay again, was 900 and something quid. And that gives you an idea of just how overblown that's become. And that's a big issue for people. I think people can, you know, people don't mind, because it's such a big event, paying 90 quid for a ticket, but they're paying 500 quid for a hotel room. That makes them blanch a wee bit.
Different story. Okay. Let's move on then. Third point of order, a very, very difficult week for Nicky Henderson, obviously. You could only but feel sorry for him, couldn't you, really? Like, it's such a cruel blow so close to the festival. Obviously he had runners and then decided to draw stumps with the majority of them. Tough week.
Yeah, I mean, there was a fair degree of schadenfreude going around on social media about this, because, you know, we didn't get to see Constitution Hill either in the Fighting Fifth or in the International Hurdle, and people saying, well, there you go, there's your comeuppance. But at the same time, you know, Nicky Henderson's season really does revolve around the Cheltenham Festival. His success there has been phenomenal over the years. And yeah, it was really tough that his horses weren't right, and they couldn't get to the bottom of why they weren't right as well through the week. So yes, you do feel a bit sorry. And I thought Willie Mullins did well to mention that. I think he made one slightly arch comment on the Tuesday after winning the champion hurdle when he was asked, you know, State Man's kind of, he's not a great champion hurdle winner, is he? And he said, well, you've got to turn up to win champion hurdles, and we turned up. And that was maybe the only vague dig you got. But actually after that, he made comments about Sam Nicky's horses and feeling sorry for the fact that, you know, you build your season up to this and it doesn't work out. His sympathy was real then. And yeah, you do have to feel a bit of sympathy. Whatever you feel about Nicky Henderson, some hail him as a hero and some aren't so keen. But this is what the game's all about, and definitely it hurt Nicky. And you don't want to see anyone in that situation, really.
To be fair to Willie, I'd say his response there was more at the person more, asking the question.
More about the person
question.
Asking the question, yeah, exactly, yeah. Yes.
Ruby, it just goes to show nothing's a certainty with horses and their health, and it's so hard. And that's probably the thing that it's very hard to communicate to punters who don't really...
It is.
Aren't working with horses on a regular basis. This can happen, can't it?
It can, and that could have been any yard. Mm. It happened to be Nicky Henderson's, but the biggest thing is, like, you're dealing with athletes that can't talk to you and can't tell you that they're, I'm feeling a bit off. They're still eating, they look well at their eye, they're not coughing, their temperature's right, their blood picture's good, but they're just not right. And, you know, with humans, they can tell you that, whereas horses can't. And you're guessing a bit. And I did feel sorry for him and for all his staff, even for Nico de Bonneville and his other jockeys. That's the week you want to perform. And they're so far off, they can't even compete. Of course you feel sorry for them.
Rory,
and his owners, sorry.
Yeah.
Michael Buckley
everyone involved.
Fairly dejected.
Yeah. Before, you mentioned feeling sorry for Nico there as well. He got a bit of criticism for an interview he did after riding in the, it was in the Berrien-Bingham, wasn't it? Was it on the second day, asking about, was it Jingle Bay he was on?
Yeah.
But he got a bit of criticism for his response to that. I thought that was over the top. I thought he was actually trying to be good humoured. He's pulled a comic face and said, you know,
yeah,
new day, same problem. And I think a few people thought he was very, very graceless there, but he wasn't at all. I think he was, again, dealing with the person asking the question, understanding that it was coming anyway, and just going, it's frustrating. What can you do? I thought
your biggest week of the year has gone up in smoke. Yeah. Like, it's putting a pretty brave face on it. But anyway, Rory, let's talk about your antipost positions. You had a decent run of things, did you?
I did all right. If Colonel Mustard had sneaked into the frame at 100-1 on the champion hurdle, it would have been a terrific week for me. Captain Guinness was probably the best result. I was on him antipost before Christmas for the champion chase, and that's a good race to punt in antipost, because really, it's one of those races where maybe you only get five contenders, even for the frame. So it's not that difficult to narrow down. You can get a bit of each way value. Whereas a lot of races at the festival, you might be looking at 20 horses who might be contenders. Trying to bet the Supreme, for example, is not my cup of tea at all. So Captain Guinness was good, and I ended up hitting the frame with a few in an antipost multiple. So slightly frustrating through the week. I thought I made, on the Monday and Tuesday, the sort of individual decisions I made weren't terrific. But then again, I was thinking about my position and then going, well, there's no point backing that again. I've really backed it. And leaving horses out of play spots and stuff because I'd backed them out. It's just a crazy thing to do. So I thought, right, I'll need to get rid of that thinking for next year. But it ended up all right. It was a curate's egg of a festival. But the antipost
what
multiple...
What exactly is a curate's egg?
Well, it was neither one thing nor the other, really.
Before we get stuck into the races, Ruby, quick word on the gaffer. Willie broke the century, history unfolding before our eyes. He's not bad at his job, is he?
No, he's all right at it. I thought he put it best himself. It was never a milestone or a target. It was something that you never thought was achievable. Who would ever have thought you could train 100 winners of the Cheltenham Festival? Amazing, amazing achievement. And, you know, he's worked all the way from the bottom for it. Like, yeah, granted, he started with the name Mullins, but he has built the place around himself, built his owners, his staff, all the horses. It's incredible to go as far as he's gone.
And changing gears and accelerating through the 100 mark. It's been a hell of a week.
Yeah, it has. And it's always about what's next, what's coming. It's going forward. And I think it's incredible. And I suppose like everything, people look back on it in time, they will say, wow, how did someone do that? At the moment, according to certain people, his domination is terrible for the sport. But when you look back, when people look back on it in time and say, God, remember when Willie Mullins did that?
Rory, greatness in our time, do you think?
No doubt about it. He's exceptional. And you only, every time Willie gives an interview, you just see a little bit of how he works. Everything is considered. Everything is, but it's not like he hasn't decided when you speak to him what he's going to say beforehand. So nothing ever sounds rehearsed with Willie. He's always thinking about everything at the time and making new decisions. And you can see him analysing what's gone before and thinking about what's coming after when asking questions, when being asked about something that's just happened in an emotional moment. And I think very few people are able to operate that way. It's an exceptional thing. And he's just all class as well. You know, every interview he gave was full of class this week. And, you know, again, you know, people are having a moan about the domination. But when you're in the presence of greatness like that, clearly Vincent O'Brien dominated the game in the 50s, and no one says now, oh, Vincent O'Brien, wasn't he terrible for racing? Mm-hmm. And we're in the same sort of situation here with Willie.
I believe you've had an interesting idea possibly for punting for next year's festival. Have you? Is that right?
Well, I thought you know, you could look at things with Willie and without Willie. You know, and this is an interesting one as well, because again, everyone said, well, obviously we've had, you've had a couple of switches there with the likes of Factophile going not to the race he was expected to go to when we were discussing the novice chases in February, and Ballyburn obviously again going for the longer race when he's expected to go to the Supreme, and those races become quite difficult to punt in. So, you know, from a sensible point of view, punting without Willie gives a different angle on things. Although other people are still, you know, Henry de Bromhead made the switch with Zayed Steele because of where Willie went, and you wouldn't necessarily been backing that horse for the Supreme. But the flip side to that, not from the betting point of view, is again people keep talking about how Willie's dominating, and that's if you take Willie's horses out of the Cheltenham Festival, you still have, you know, 10 of the Grade 1 races would have gone to Irish stables. And this is the thing. What Willie's doing is he's raising the bar for Irish trainers. And what British trainers need to see is that they need to raise their own bar. They can't sit there moaning about it and trying to work out how to change the program to suit themselves. They need to pull themselves up by their bootstraps, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's not easy to do. There's no simple solution to it. You just got to keep working at it, and you've got to look for excellence all the time.
One thing I find interesting, even looking at it, is, so you look at, say, they say, well, why have those English owners gone to Ireland? It's prize money, prize money, prize money. It's more than prize money. And you look at some of the theories and the solutions as to what should happen at Cheltenham, and it all goes back to the one thing, more handicaps, more handicaps. What have the big owners run away from? A handicap system.
Yeah.
That is not, that. And you're talking about different theories and playing systems and... Anyway, when you look at British racing, the Irish program encourages you to have a top novice. The English program doesn't encourage you as much.
Very good. Cheltenham Festival 2025 markets without Willie Mullins. Watch this space, brought to you by the good people at Paddy Power alongside Rory Delargy. Right, let's get stuck into having a look through some of the performances this week just gone. Let's kick things off with the Supreme Novices Hurdle. Obviously, Zayed Steele, a rousing winner of the opening race of the festival, Rory Delargy. How would you rate the performance, and what would you expect from him going forward?
I think it was a decent performance. He did well to overcome a slightly slow jump at the last, and he was passed by Mystical Power. He did well to respond and come up the hill strongly. He's not a champion hurdle horse, I don't think, on that showing. And I think, again, if you stick Ballyburn in the race, it looks a very different contest as well. He's likeable. I think 2.5 miles plus will be where he'll go in the future. You could go chasing with him next season without any hassle. And I suppose that's probably, if you don't think he's going to be a champion hurdle horse, then chasing is the obvious option. With a lot of these horses, a lot of the races at Cheltenham, because of the a combination of the ground, but also the field sizes for a lot of the good races. You'll end up learning a lot more about some of these horses from Punchestown than you would have in the past. Often you get the big performances at Cheltenham, and then Punchestown, maybe you follow up, maybe it's a race too far. I think this season, horses have ended up having maybe slightly easier races at Cheltenham than they would do, and they've got an opportunity of actually doing more at Punchestown. So it'll be interesting to see how Slade Steele gets on if he runs again this season. He got a bit warm and he was a little bit keen in the race, but he did well then to win given those circumstances. I thought Firefox shaped as well as anything in the race. He just got he came with a run between horses and ran out of room between the last two hurdles, and the race got a bit messy at that point. I thought he lost a bit of momentum and then came strongly up the hill. I thought that was a nice performance, and I'd be keeping certainly keeping him in my notebook.
Ruby Willie obviously had the runner up, Mystical Power. Tully Hill didn't fire. Asian Absolutely. Master came wide but ran well. Super Sunday out the back of Mr. Yeah. Giff, mid-div. Give us a rundown of some.
Mr. Giff was a bit keen. Thought Mystical Power ran a cracker on reed ground. Probably that was too slow from looking at his pedigree. Tully Hill bombed out. Thought he was getting it so easy in front and jumping like a buck. But the top of the hill, you didn't really want to be on him. Paul's body language wasn't sufficient. Super Sunday, it was his first start. He'd be a better horse next year. And Asian Master probably wanted a little bit further. But thought the winner was the best horse in the race. And I thought that when a lot of the races at Cheltenham, thought the best horse just won.
Yes.
I can't think of too many hard luck stories throughout the week. And Slade Steele, yeah, to me, he looks a chaser.
It was kind of a beano for punters that way, wasn't it? It was generally speaking, the better horse got the job done in the kind of level weights races generally.
Yeah, if you weren't desperately looking for value in inverted commas, you know, just finding the obvious horse, even in the handicaps, was the way forward. And because, you know, we'll probably touch on the fact that the fields were smaller than normal there, but because of the small fields, there was less, you know, in a 20 runner supreme, a 20 runner Brown advisory, you've got a different kind of race. You've got to try to avoid the pitfalls. You've got to keep out of the way of trouble, whereas in a small field race you could just ride your race and the best horses should come to the fore.
I thought it was ground as well. I thought real soft ground, and I thought even from watching some of the racing earlier in the year in the UK, I thought the riders rode the ground. I thought it was good to watch. There was no absolute slogs where they're going up and down the one spot, which there could have been.
Yes,
I thought they got the pace of the races right and they finished the races and it made them better spectacles.
Let's move things on then to the Arkle, and going down to the start, I thought Gaelic Warrior's race was run, but I'd never give him a compliment to his face, but I'll compliment him behind his back. I thought it was a Townend masterclass. Didn't panic when he was headed.
Yeah.
And because he could have hung like a gate if he asked him, could he?
He could have, but I'd say I thought in the parade ring, his race was run. Mm. When I watched him go to the start, I was happier with him. I think getting a lead was a huge help to him, just to get him to jump straighter. They quickened off the top of the hill and Paulette found a 50 by him.
I think he was happy, actually.
He was happy to let him away with you. And he just kept sitting and he came alive off the home turn, two good jumps the last two fences, and he was really impressive. Like, I mean, and you talk about betting without Willie. I mean, when he won the 3 mile novice hurdle at Punchestown, you would have wanted a crystal ball to say you'd see him ended up in the Arkle.
Indeed, yeah. Yeah.
What changed between Leopardstown and Cheltenham for Gaelic Warrior, do you think?
More work, dropped him back in trip. It was the trip that David wanted to go for a long time, Casey. He maintained he was the fastest 2 miler we had. Yeah. And just a couple of things like that.
And just like attitude change, or no, he's just the same horse. It just
he settled better, he relaxed, he raced. You look back now and you look at the speed of the race in Leopardstown, looks like he just overdid it in the first mile and a quarter.
Mm. Rory, for you, top class performance?
Yeah, I wrote down he definitely benefited from the hood, and that's, you know, not every horse does, but he's the ideal horse to do that. And he's all for all, he stays in, he will stay 3 miles over fences, but there's no need to be trying that because so much can go wrong from over that trip, and he can get himself in trouble. He wants a lead. He wants horses to pull him into the race, and therefore, because he's got so much talent, 2 miles will be his trip, because that's the distance that horses will pull him through the race and make him an easier ride. And, you know, it was not your ideal scenario for his prep to be over 2 mile five at essentially at a two horse race. because, you know, everything conspired against him that day. And, you know, he did for about a mile and three quarters. He's flown through that race looking very good, but he's doing everything. He's doing too much in front. And then when something does go wrong, then it all goes wrong very quickly. It all unravels. Whereas as long as he's got something to aim at, he looks like a much easier ride. And the fact that he was pretty straight throughout is really encouraging. It means you can race him wherever you want, really. But he'll always be, you know, there's you still always will have that problem with him. If he's in a small field race, he can get himself beat. But in a really good race, he's got a chance of actually coming through and winning then, because he's got tons of class, and the way a very good races tend to be run will bring out the best in him.
What do you do to straighten him up, Ruby, at home? Or is there anything that you can do? Was it just on the day he jumped a bit straighter?
Just getting the lead. So yeah. He followed. The horses are a herd animal. So when the horse in front of him was going straight, he followed the one in front of him. When he's in front, he kind of does his own thing.
Does whatever he wants. Okay, very good. Let's move on to the Ultima then. And the Brits got on the board here with Chianti Classico. Possibly the biggest shout of the day, biggest reception of the day in the winner's enclosure for David Bass, who gave it the big one all the way up the chute, and rightly so. Rory, what did you think of his performance, and anything in behind that caught your eye?
Yeah, it was a good performance. It came barely at two horses with similar profiles in there. They both had big chances on paper. Chianti Classico got the perfect Kim Bailey prep for the race. Trelawne also was really interested, but he came down at the second fence. I think we were both keen on Trelawne.
The time he jumped off, I thought he had no chance. He didn't even want to go to the first fence.
You don't know that beforehand.
No. But
there was a few of them this week where the riding was on the wall at the first fence. But yeah, he got in there off a good mark. He's a sound jumper. He's just a typical Kim Bailey horse, really. And Kim has reinvented himself essentially as a different kind of trainer to who he was 20, 25 years ago. Of course, he's won the Champion Hurdle, won the Gold Cup, won the Grand National, and plenty of trainers would have hung their boots up by now and be walking around in the bedroom slippers enjoying what they've gone before. But he's reinvented himself. He realizes his best chance of winning good races is with well-schooled novices and handicaps. Mm-hmm. And that's the way he trains his horses these days. And, you know, maybe one of those will turn into, he had a Grade One winner a couple of seasons ago, obviously, at Ascot. Mm-hmm. One, you know, maybe he got a superstar out of that, but he's aiming these good horses at the handicaps before the handicapper can get an idea of exactly how good they are, and it was a good result. I thought the golfer caught the eye in behind. For all he's run well over an extreme trip, gives the impression he doesn't stay 3 miles to me. You could say that he maybe wasn't fit enough. You know, he had that. He had his charity race warm up, but I don't think he was left short. I think he was fit enough. I think he doesn't quite stay in the company he's capable of running in. I think he's an interesting one for the Paddy Power in November. I think dropping back to 2.5 might actually suit him. His two wins of over fences have come over 2 mile 5 and 2 mile 6. So something like the Paddy Power or the December Gold Cup will suit him, and he caught the eye. Meeting the Water similarly travelled very well through the race and didn't see it out quite as strongly. I don't think there was talk of him being a Gold Cup horse. I don't think that's the case, but he's clearly got more RAM. He's got more winning to do.
Interesting. Were you doing your shaking your fist, get the novices out of our handicaps, Ray, when he crossed the line?
Well, it's not even get the novices out of the handicaps. It doesn't really bother me too much either way, to tell you the truth, Tom. But when people are bemoaning where are the runners in the novice chases, Chianti Classico and Meeting in the Waters, two novices, first and third, and the handicappers are second, where we've all been caught with a novice as well. I just think when you go in against novices with a heart, we have a handicapper like Twig, and you run into two horses like Chianti Classico, Meeting of the Waters, who the handicapper can't possibly have maximised or have a real handle on. You just wonder where the runners are in the novice chases, but that's the British system. It's all novice handicaps. You're encouraged to be getting yourself the best mark, and then you're wondering where the horses are in the novice races. They devise the system.
Champion Hurdle, the feature race in day one, and State Man got his day in the sun. Obviously a multiple Grade One winner already, but hadn't quite managed to bag the big one at the Cheltenham Festival. Ruby, ridden like the best horse in the race, was it a grind or was he just doing enough?
It was a sprint, wasn't it, really? And I reckon, you know, Paul kind of surprised Willie with the way he rode him, but Paul was of the opinion he was riding the best horse and the fastest horse, and he rode him like the fastest horse, and that's ultimately what won the race. He quickened well to beat Irish Point. Lucia kind of gave the Seven Barrows team a glimmer of hope, and you're thinking, wow, could they, will they, might they, maybe. Ultimately, they didn't, but she's won an absolute cracker. And Zarek the Brave was well beaten in fourth, but it was just get the job done. It's what Stateman generally does, and it's exactly what Paul Hemlin does. Just get it done.
Thought Irish Point ran well, could be an interesting horse if you went something like the entry hurdle.
Yeah, I could, but the connections have Bob Ollinger, so yeah. I imagine that's where he's going. And Irish Point kind of caught between the rock and the hard place, isn't he? Mm. You've got Jupu and Irish Point. Will Irish Point go back up the 3 miles at entry and Jupu go to Punchestown? Maybe that's the way they split them.
Yeah, I think so. I think so, because Jupu's, you know, he's now got this reputation of being best after a break, and he was deliberately brought in very fresh to Cheltenham. So, because Irish Point a chance to prove something in the Liverpool hurdle. You know, he's won over 3 miles already. That was, Gordon had said prior to Leberstein at Christmas, he'd be going up to 3 miles, and that would be the you know, he thought it would be the making of him. I thought he's run an absolute cracker in the champion, given that a sprint at 2 miles wouldn't really have suited him. So whether he's, I mean, he didn't have to really prove his stamina thoroughly at Leopardstown at Christmas, because he outclassed the opposition. Home by the Lee wasn't on his game that day, and therefore couldn't make it a test of stamina that he wanted. So Irish Point has won it through speed, but I think, you know, he should be effective at 3 miles, and it's nice to have two strings to your bow in a race like that.
Your take on this year's champion hurdle as a whole? What are you thinking?
I think you can't knock Stateman. I know he hasn't been wildly impressive on the day, but he's been, you know, did Paul lift his stick on him at all?
No, but even I was talking to someone before us, and they were on about the distance, and I was thinking, God, from memory, does Stateman never win far? And when I look back through it, he won a maiden hurdle by 7 lengths, but other than that, it all revolved right around where the bookmakers had the spread, five lengths.
Yeah.
He never goes away and blows a field apart. Mm-hmm. He just goes for wins, and then I've done enough.
And this is a common theme with some of the races at Cheltenham this season. You can knock the bare form, the you know, the performance ratings of the big race winners, because you've beaten X horse by this number of lengths. Therefore, you can't possibly say this is a top class performance. But when you're able to win causally, then what else can you do?
Causally should encourage longevity. If you're never going to the well, if you're never asking horses for everything they have, they should be able to keep going and keep repeating it for longer.
Very good. Let's look at a few of the other performances on day one of the Cheltenham Festival. Ruby, starting with Lozzie Mouth, who was
she was very good.
Fairly good, I'd
say. She was, dropped in, crept around, and she was very decisive on the day. But I think she needed to be, or she has to be. I still think that she has a bit to go to get from there up to where Stateman is, definitely to where Constitution Hill is, possibly be to where Ballyburn could be, listening to Willie Mullins. So like, she's going in the right direction, but she has to be better at six than she was at five.
Are you putting cold water on the possibility of a champion hurdle tilt next year?
Well, I think she will, and Willie has said it, that's the way she's going to go. But I still think she has to improve. I think beating Tell Me Something Girl, Hispanic Moon and Lantry Lady, that's the bare bones of the form. And I guess when you look at the champion hurdle and you look where Zarek the Brave finished as a 5-year-old, it's just not as hard and fast as most people think.
Yeah, she would have finished. But if you translate her, the form that she showed there, and put it into the champion hurdle, she probably would have finished third. I don't want to say readily held third, because you don't get to see what she could have done.
Exactly.
But it's simply transferring the performance. So that's what she needs. That's the improvement she needs to find. But in fairness, 5-year-olds don't tend to be massively competitive in champion hurdles. Taken as a whole, obviously we've had a couple of winners in the last 20 years. But I think the campaign that Willie's given her gives her a chance of progressing again. The idea of taking the first half of the season off. I'd like to see a lot more Triumph hurdle horses given the similar preparation, not just the mares. You know, give them time to develop a little bit. Most of them need to.
The horses, the ultimate opportunity to be the best that they can be.
Yeah.
That doesn't sit with too many people. And that is a lot of the problem. You have to try and give the horses, and that's why Willie Mullins stands hard and fast on it. And it was his answer when he was asked in Cheltenham. He's trying to give his horses the best that they can be. But look, we're in such a rush as a society, we don't even watch adverts anymore. Yeah. Let alone wait for a horse to fulfil his potential 18 months down the line. Yeah. Like, that's just crazy. How could you expect anybody to do that?
Rory, quick word on Lark in the Morning. A plan well made.
Yeah, and they seem to get away with the ground. That'll be an excuse for Ram for a couple of no-shows, and the fact that, you know, he's he hadn't fulfilled what had seemed to be like great potential. I think he was a big eye catcher as a young horse. He won a barrier trial at Dundalk in great style, and a few people were raving about him then. So he's got the job done. But I mean it shows what a good trainer of juveniles Joseph O'Brien is, and I think, you know, that's essentially where Joseph's strength is. And when it comes to National Hunt racing, he's very good with young horses, and he's won that race twice now recently. He strictly speaking doesn't have that initial triumph hurdle win to his name. The stewards had him in when Ivanovich Gorbatov won, saying, "Why are you behaving like you're training the winner at Cheltenham?" Which is quite amusing. But he's very, very good with that kind of horse. But he's very good with that kind of horse on the flat as well. And he's going to be more flat orientated in the future, I think. But that was a good bit of training. But you know, he's beaten the rank outsider in second. Who's run a cracker for Ross O'Sullivan?
He's not Irish.
Yeah, yeah. Ran a blinder. Yeah,
that would have been a great result for everybody, result, wouldn't it? But you know, the Boodles isn't really a race to take home after the festival, is it?
Quick word on Corpus Cross and the National Hunt Chase. Very impressive. Was he the best of a moderate bunch?
He was. Two horses give the running in that race for me. Him and Mr. Vango. So essentially, he's beaten Mr. Vango 25 lengths. How good is that? He's done it very easily, but. Disappointing. The trio who ran in the Reynoldstown at Ascot all looked quite interesting on paper, and none of them have run to that level again. None of them jumped particularly well. Ben Pauling's horse, who won, was beaten a long, long, long way from home, and he clearly hadn't come out of that race particularly well. The other two, Kilbeg King, had jumped well at Kempton. He got very low at Ascot and still ran a cracking race to be second. And he was low again at Too Many Fences at Cheltenham, and that spoiled his chance of winning. Apple Away, I thought she would improve a lot for the step up and trip, but again, she's just a little bit messy at her fences, and she hasn't shown the same form over fences as she did over hurdles. She had every chance the way she was ridden, so that was a wee bit disappointing. So Mr. Vango's gone out in front. And give them a target, and Corbett's Cross has come through. Embassy Gardens obviously made several mistakes in the race, but the one he made at the second last knocked the wind out of his sails completely, so you can ignore him. So really, that's what it boils down to. Mm-hmm. But of course, the beauty, if you've got a horse at Corbett's Cross, is you've won a Grade 2 at Cheltenham without having to come off the bridle, set you up nicely for whatever else you want to do. Mm-hmm. But it also tells you what the problem with the National Hunt Chase now is that making it a quasi Grade 1, you're always going to have small fields now. It's going to be an easy option for a horse like Corbett's Cross. And Cheltenham need to work out what the National Hunt Chase is meant to be. The National Hunt Chase was historically the race of the festival, but it was a maiden chase. Nothing that had won a race was eligible to run in it or at the time of entry. And I think they just go back to square one and say, you know, it's a maiden chase.
I fully agree. It's not even the beginners. You had to be a maiden at the start of the season. So you couldn't have won a bump or a maiden hurdle, any of those races. But he could have won one hunter's chase, might have been in it. But what that also encompassed was a wider demographic of owners, trainers, etc. And it was a much bigger field. I don't think it's worked since it came in as a novice chase. I think it's the one novice chase that has sucked away more than the other novice chases. So that'd just be a small tweak. But I do think I started as an amateur. I would be fighting for amateurs to keep the races they have, the races they can ride in. It was the first ride I had at the Cheltenham Festival, so I fully agree with that. But I would be going back to it being, I'm not sure how you get there, but it has to encompass a wider demographic.
Yes, exactly.
Would it be fair to maybe say that the VHA get a little bit windy about it? They don't really like it. They've tried to change the rules to make it safer. It makes them a little bit more uneasy.
Cheltenham Racecourse as well are part of that. Yeah, and it was that one race, what was it, 4 years ago now?
Before lockdown, isn't it?
But that, unfortunately, encompassed two or three Grade 2 novice chasers racing with a load of horses that were the old style National Hunt Chase, and the four good ones pulled the others that were of lesser ability too fast, and they got tired. Whereas if you just confine it to all horses of the one ability, they won't go as hard.
And I think a lot of races at the Cheltenham Festival, you need to sit down and say, right, we'll make unique qualification criteria for these races to keep their initial spirit. And obviously, you don't necessarily have to have a bunch of horses who've never won anything. You just have entries for it in January. You can win a race from then on. You can win, obviously, a point-to-point. You can win a 100 chase. But you can win your novice chase between entry and the festival itself, and you're still qualified. But yes, keep a wide demographic in there. Keep graded horses out of it. See, Cheltenham, they've made the mistake of thinking they want to get more graded horses in all the races, but and that's only, actually completely the opposite.
There's only a certain
they
amount
want,
of them.
They want to filter the top quality horses to certain races and make sure that other races, and that's, I spoke to Ian Renton about six or seven years ago about an idea for different races at the festival. And I put up the idea of the selling hurdle, which is, I love that. But he was horrified by it. He goes, no, we need to have more quality. And I said, you can't have more quality.
Yeah.
If you have more races, you have to have less quality, by definition. Yeah. But it was like, there's no understanding of that. So I'd like to see races like the National Hunt Chase retain their old character. Yes, you need to make sure that it's reasonably... But you increase safety by ensuring you don't have graded horses racing against horses who are 3 stone inferior to them. You basically say, listen, this is for good old-fashioned plodders, and it's good to see them do their job, but they're not... It's almost like it's a hunter chase, almost, but not with a hunter chase... Qualifying criteria, and that's fine. It's okay to have races like that at the Cheltenham Festival.
Okay, work required to the conditions of the National Hunt Chase then. Ruby, final word on day one. Patrick Mullen's got an 8-day ban for his ride in the National Hunt Chase. Any insight as to why that happened? It seems like Harris missing a day at Ferryhouse there.
Yeah, and the same for Mark Walsh, got a 4-day ban for one flick on Factor File. Different whip rules, they both fell foul, but it was for... Mark using his whip once, Patrick using his whip twice, but the way the tot up works in the UK, that's what it was for.
Yeah, as well. Patrick was for not giving the horse time to respond, so it's basically
it's
about the time between strikes. And for Mark, it was for hitting the horse in the wrong place. He cut the horse down the flank.
Yeah,
and
Mark only flicked factified once like that.
And he'd be annoyed by that because you know he didn't need to do it at all. It was no big deal, but according to the rules, it's it's a ban.
Rules are indeed rules. Okay, that's Tuesday in a nutshell. Wednesday coming up right after this break.
What would National Hunt Racing be without a little choice? Jockey or trainer? Bay or grey? Form or silks? And now, Paddy Power's new money-back tokens give you even more choice because you choose the race to apply your token to. Get money back as a free bet if your horse finishes in the designated places on a race of your choosing. Just look out for our money-back token promos and claim your token however you like. Paddy Power. Applies to races with 8 or more runners. Opt-in required. Max free bet £10. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
Okay, we're back for Wednesday. Here's your obligatory reminder to subscribe to the Paddy Power Racing YouTube channel. Righto, let's get stuck in the Gallagher Novices Hurdle. And Ballyburn was a very, very impressive winner with the distinctive low head carriage, Ruby. He blew them all away.
Don't think we need to delay too long here, Tom. He was exceptional. Loved William Mullins' comments that if he has a horse maybe that could do a Don run, he might try and do it with this fella if his owners are willing to do it. That sounds like it could be fun, but he would just jump, travelled and blew the opposition away.
Yeah, Rory, not much to say really. It's just as simple does. When your eyes are telling you something is good, maybe it's just that simple.
Yeah, and the clock told you that as well. It wasn't always the case with the big races this week because of the way they were run, but everything about that performance was out of the top drawer, and obviously it was a 1-2-3-4-5 for Willie. Not quite in the realms of Michael Dickinson's Gold Cup quintet, but still pretty impressive and a great one.
Onwards we go. Brown Advisory, Factophile, another very impressive performance. And Rory, I thought he did a lot wrong, and he still managed to look like he was doing it very right as he crossed the line.
Yeah, again, he's been able to learn in the job there, and he's a. I would have been worried in an old fashioned Brown Advisory / RSA. He might have gotten in trouble because he had very little experience coming into the race. But the nature of the Grade One novice chases, Arkle aside, at the on the Grade Two novice chases at Cheltenham these days means you don't get big fields, and horses who've got lots of class but lack experience aren't punished for it. Indeed, Monty Star was only having his third start over fences and second as well. So a lot to like about it. But again, in terms of what he achieved on the book, he's a long way short of Gold Cup standard on that. But of course, this is only his second season racing with no novice hurdle campaign. So there's a lot of improvement to come. And again, you know, if you offered connections this season at the start of it, right, you'll have, so you know, you'll win essentially a match in your prep, and then you'll win a small field brown advisory at the end of it. You'd have taken that. You know, he doesn't need to be getting involved in wars at this stage. There'll be plenty of wars ahead of him, so it's the ideal novice chase season. He's learning all the time. He's picking up good graded prizes, and he retains that scope for improvement next year. Does, again, on the figures, he needs to improve a fair bit, but he was never going to be able to put up a massive performance given the nature of the race, because he was there to pick up the front runners, and he's done it nicely in the end.
Do you see that improvement within? Could you see him going on to bigger and better things next
year?
Yes,
I mean, I don't know what his ceiling is liable to be, and it's, you know, I don't want to suggest that what he produced in the day is as good as he is. But I also don't want to say, oh, he's definitely a Gold Cup horse. Very difficult to know what his ceiling might be. He's very, very likeable. He's got a good attitude. He's got a good jump on him. And, you know, he's in a good place now for Willie to step him up next season. It'll be interesting to see, you know, he's a kind of horse who would make a fair bit of appeal in a John Durkin to start with, and you know he's adaptable in terms of trip 2.5 to 3. So there's lots of good races for him to win next season.
Ruby, myself being a man who knows very little about anything, he did look like he did a bit wrong, a little bit lit up, chin was out going down the back straight, and was long at a few of his fences. Took chances.
I thought Mark gave him a great ride. He looked like a horse that had been running over shorter distances. He wanted to race like a horse that had been racing at a higher cruising speed. And Mark had to teach him that through the first mile of the race. I thought he gave him a great ride. I liked what I saw. He has the potential to improve into a Gold Cup horse. But Rory's right. He has to improve into that.
I was on another preview before the day itself, and we were talking about the project of obviously skirting around the novice hurdle season to kind of expedite things a little bit. That seems to be paying dividends now.
I'd say it was age related as much as anything else. He was he 6 or 7 winning the Brown Advisory? He was older, anyway. He was 7.
Yeah, 7. Yeah,
seven, yeah. That's where he didn't go novice hurdling, mm-hmm. because he'd be 7 rising 8 as a novice chaser, yeah. So they went straight away because of age.
Let's move on to the Curl Cup. Langer Dan got the mob shouting in the streets. The pitchforks were out for Langer Dan. Rory, were they?
It was a little bit. In fairness, you know, there were comments about Langer Dan before he turned up at Cheltenham when he ran his prep race. There were quite a few people going, "Oh, you can see exactly what's happening here. You can see what's happening. He's just going to get a, you know, turn up at Cheltenham having dropped down to his last mark, and you'll see a different horse in March." And of course, that's exactly what happened. And it's worth pointing out, on his prep race was the Lanzarote hurdle. He's gone off on the exchange. What was he? 66-1 SP, 150-1 on the exchanges for that race. So although he had an excuse, he came up with a broken blood vessel. The market seemed to know he was going to break a blood vessel before the race started. Dan Skelton has played the system there, and you know, as far as I'm concerned, the system is there to be played. This is what we're talking about, the handicap system and the way horses are treated, and the way the whole system is set up in the UK. You're basically encouraged to play it, particularly for the big handicaps. And I don't think there was much hidden there. You know, Dan has tried to get Langer Dan in the right place for Cheltenham for the last 4 seasons, and he's managed. He's run very well. He ran really well in the Fred Winter as a 4-year-old, and he's been back several times. Run twice in 1 week, and ran very well. So this is where he comes alive. He's shown nothing all season, but he didn't show an awful lot last season before he turned up to win the race. And people can get angry about that all they like, but that's, you either play the system or you stand up and say, "Oh no, I refuse to play the system," and you don't win the races. And if you're a racehorse trainer who refuses to play the system, what exactly, you know, what are you in the game for? You know, it's just the way it is. The very good point was made about the fact that he had an excuse for running badly at Kempton, but the handicap had dropped in 2 pounds. Now, that's a very good point. I was told, spoke to Phil Smith years ago, and he said, this is how it works. If you run well, but you show that you're not good enough to win a race, then you'll get dropped in the weights. Trainers always complain if they don't get dropped as quick as they go up. He said, listen, if you run in a race and you finish 5th or 6th, and you've clearly run on your merits, then I'll drop you £3, no problem at all. He said, but if you run, finish out the back of the field, I'm not going to drop you at all. Well, horses who finish out the back of the field regularly get dropped £1 or £2 by the BHA handicapper, and they clearly shouldn't. You know, horses should be seen to be running on the merits, and if they're not quite good enough to win off the mark, then drop them, and drop them by more than £1. But if they're beaten 150 lengths, they're not running on the, they're not running on their merits for whatever reason, maybe because they're not able to, they shouldn't be getting dropped a pound here or there. He wasn't dropped at all for his reappearance. But there's pressure on the handicappers these days because you've had a couple of appeals at Cheltenham in the last couple of years, including the winner of the Coral Cup a few years ago. So there is a bit of pressure for them to drop horses, but really the system should be a lot more transparent. People should know what to expect with the way the horses run. And I think the fact that you're getting small drops for runs that are completely out of kilter with the horse's form line shouldn't be happening. And we should see horses at least vaguely competitive. You know, people are saying, oh, my horse is too high in the weights. And look, he's hopelessly tailed off. That proves, well, that doesn't prove it at all. Your horse finishing sixth or seventh and trying his best is proof that he's too high in the weights. Your horse beating 100 lengths is proof that you haven't trained it for the race.
It was put to me in Cheltenham that if Langerdan was trained in Ireland, they'd be throwing rotten tomatoes into the winner's enclosure. They'd be shouting and roaring. But I think the key factor there, Ruby, is that the Irish handicapper probably wouldn't have slipped Langerdan back down the weights if he was trained in Ireland so far. Is that right?
Actually, all you have to do, I don't know, maybe he would have. There were plenty of bad runs, and the handicappers do or are trying to give horses chances, so they're coming down in the ratings. Look, I'd say most of the official handicappers have forgotten more about handicapping than I know about it, but that is the system. You've got to play the system, and if so many people could see it, I'm just amazed he went off 13-2.
As big as that?
Yeah. Sure, if everybody knew, listening to them after the race, everyone knew, everyone could see it, why didn't more people back him if they really knew it?
Well, this is true. But of course, you know, people will want to back a winner and also have a moan about it as well.
Double whammy.
You want to have
taken it.
It's also worth pointing out, we probably won't touch much on the race otherwise. Unexpected Party was also lined up for a bit of a touch, a much quieter one, one off at 12-1. But again, Dan Skelton, he appeared on the final episode of the Road to Cheltenham with you and Lydia, and basically said, you know, these horses should run well at Cheltenham. They're coming to themselves at the right time. Unexpected Party said, well, I've just come to the conclusion he doesn't stay 2.5 miles. We'd run at 2.5 miles 14 times and hardly ever. The only times he'd ever run at 2 miles, aside from on his hurdling debut, was in the Henry VIII Novice Chase at Sandown 2 years running when he was out of his depth. So here he is having his first run competitively, essentially, over 2 miles, and he won well. And that's also playing the system, but it's playing the system in a different way. And I've got no problem with the trainer playing the system. If you've got, you know, if the authorities have a problem with it, they need to deal with it by having, you know, by having more robust principles, looking at, you know, having stewards. I have a handicapper on the stewards panel. Or at least having a handicapper saying, this is what this horse should have done and this is what it has done, ask those questions. Because sometimes you'll get the stewards. I've seen a horse get a ban from the stewards for not trying and get dropped by the handicapper the same week. I saw one of those at Warwick a couple of seasons ago, and that doesn't make any sense. The two of them should be working together. So you shouldn't have the stewards doing one thing and the handicapper doing something else. Those two need to be tied together.
But if you stood, to me, handicapping, like if you look at the horses and you're thinking to yourself, Langerdan, when I saw him in Cheltenham last year, like I could see all his ribs. I'm looking at him now, I can't see a rib.
Yes.
I'm not dropping you. Mm-hmm. It's the handicapping is ultimately an opinion that has become formulated, that they have to now go by the formula. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that particularly works. It is opinion. It should be left to opinion. And even you look at Ballyadam, Langerdan got £10 for winning the Coral Cup. So what's that, 5 runs to get him back down to 141 again? You look at Ballyadam, ran in last year's county hurdle off 148, finished 5th, runs this year's Coral Cup off 147, finished 2nd. He goes up £2. To me, he is a 147.
Yeah.
So it's off him you work everything else. Mm. But look, that's again, handicappers have a job to do. I'm not going to stick the knife in.
That's a tale as old as time, and I think the long and short of it is, well done, Dan Skelton. Onwards we go. The Queen Mother Champion Chase. Firstly, Ruby, any news on El Fabiolo? All okay?
Yeah, I think he is. He was okay wherever they ran him at home. He was fine, yeah. All good, just missed the first, wasn't great at the second, or wasn't great at the third, and then stood in his head at the fifth. Guest left his off four on the takeoff side, put his near four out through it, did the splits, belly on the floor, and stood up at a standstill, and I think quite rightly, Paul Townend straight away pulled him up.
Yeah, it's funny, on the television angle, you couldn't quite see what exactly happened, but it was a case of he couldn't really keep going.
Well, it's, do I keep going? Will he be all right? If I stop now, I'm definitely not going to do any more damage, yeah. And hopefully he is all right. But that's a big call, and that's, Paul Townend made the right call. I mean, when you make a mistake like that, you need a miracle to win, and you have to hope the horse is okay. Mm-hmm. And if in doubt,
anyway, we didn't, because he pulled up almost immediately. What you didn't really get there was that he'd actually stopped to a walk anyway, because of the various things that went wrong in that jump. It was a very heavy landing,
yes,
which is obviously liable to produce an injury. And then he's done the splits as well, and as you said, belly on the floor, he virtually fell.
Yeah,
and he'd have been starting again from a standing start, which is never a good thing anyway.
No, I know, and people do, and you're running down the hill and you're thinking, well, I've that much in hand, maybe I could beat them, but you run down the hill and he falls at the next.
You're
up to your neck in it then.
Yeah. Most wanted.
And also, it doesn't,
Cheltenham's most wanted.
Even though he's got, was he 2-9 in the end? Even though he's that short, he's actually unlikely, even if he continues and everything is fine, to win the race anyway. Yeah. The margins are a lot finer than you think at that level.
I'd agree.
With that in mind then, and with Gaelic Warrior being a rising force and a potentially returning Endergrameen next year, would El Fabiolo have the scope to step up to something like a Ryanair?
His style of running would suggest not. He is quite keen. So it'll be interesting to see what happens down the line. But they just all have to stay in one piece.
Exactly. There's not, you don't move him out of the division because of what happens. You keep him in there and you keep your options open, and I see no reason why he shouldn't get another crack at the champion, particularly with nothing else that was in the race this year.
But it was a great result for the winner.
It was wonderful to see. Yeah, absolutely.
They're playing him at the top level for God knows how long now.
Specialty are all over again.
Yeah, it was, but running him at the top level, and you know, Declan Andy, he's a good owner. Henry's a great record in champion chases, and buy a ticket, you can't win.
You can't win.
It also shows that having a heart problem doesn't stop you winning a champion chase.
Yeah. Barbara again
did the same thing. He was pulled up with a heart issue between his two champion chases and was probably better the second year.
Sprinter,
exactly. Yeah. I mean, we went through 2 years of, you can't do anything with them, because you have a heart issue, you check them out, you make sure they're healthy, and you push on with them. And that was, you know, eventually that's what happened with Sprinter Sacra, but it took a wee while for that to happen. There was an awful lot of talk about, you can't ask him to go too fast. The heart.
Quick word on Edward Stone, which would have impacted your heart.
Too soft for me. What do you think?
Sorry?
Ground was too soft for him.
Well, see, Alan King thinks he wants that ground. So, I think he wants good to soft ground. I think
is he a horse
too
that
soft.
Alan King has maybe got wrong a small bit through?
Well, he was
not as wrong as William Mullins has passed out Vega.
No. We'll come to that. Great trainer and everything. But
yeah, I mean, I said when we discussed at Cheltenham, we discussed the Ryanair in the first place, I said, you know, the problem is that Alan King kind of doesn't want to go for the champion chase because he knows how strong a race it is, and he wants to believe the horse is a 2.5 miler, and I think this is not really helpful. You can't really commit yourself to your horse's plan until he was beaten at Kempton. He's then sort of said, well, I've messed the horse around too much, I'm gonna let him enjoy himself at Newbury. And he's maybe done too much at Newbury in that, you know, that's in a prep for Cheltenham, you probably want to look after them a little bit, but he almost had to do that to get the horse's confidence back, and whether it left a little bit of a mark. We also had this discussion about Alan King saying, well, I've changed the training regime for my horses again. I used to ask them to go up three times up the hill at the end, and that worked fine, and now I'm only doing two times. Well, I'm guessing he went to two times because the horses weren't seeing their seasons out because they were possibly overtrained. So he's gone back to that, and maybe Eberson hasn't been at his best, but again, he looked happy through the race for a long way and was just getting tired when he's tipped up. To be honest, you know, he was a percentage call, and after he was beaten at Kempton, he was out to 25 for the champion chase. And for me, well, it's a no-brainer. He's going to go for the champion chase. So the 25s in a race with not an awful lot of depth was the each-way value. I was already on Captain Guinness pre-Christmas, so I was actually I was hoping both of them would hit the frame, to be honest. Number one, Elf, I'd be like, well, there you go. I should get this. I was a wee bit disappointed. But I'd rather Captain Guinness had won the race.
I have no problem commenting on what races trainers should run horses in. Like, I definitely was involved in that even when I was riding. But as regards the coaching, as they should do twice up the gallop or three times up the gallop, I have no opinion on that. Because until you've tried it, it's definitely not none of my business.
Couple of other bits on the day. Ruby Jasmine DeVoe in the bumper was the horse that got it all done. Was it kind of an emotional enough experience? Obviously, it was kind of poetic in a sense. Patrick doing it for his dad, and obviously Maureen had passed away only a couple of weeks in advance.
There was a whole lot to it, but it was great thing. Great thing. It was lovely that Patrick rode him. And fair play to him. I probably wouldn't have picked Jasmine DeVoe. I was more with Floro Fazil and one that ran terribly, Argento Boy. Cantico was disappointing as well. But Jasmine DeVoe, he was good. Romeo Coolio and Jalan Dudary were the two talking horses at Gardens, and they ran big races. Sounds Victorious, Fishery Lane, the Yellow Clay. I'd say a lot of the right horses came to the fore in the bumper.
Yeah.
So he just time tells if it was a good race or not.
But it always, throws out winners, doesn't it?
Yeah, sure. What was it last year's, the 2023 edition, 21 ran, and they've all won since something? So it'll be, you would imagine at least the top half will be somewhat decent next season over hurdles, won't they?
Yeah, you'd have thought so. And there were even horses who disappointed there. Cantico, you mentioned, he ran too bad to be true, and he looks the part.
Yeah.
He should be all right. I thought the two I took out of the race were the Yellow Clay and Hallowen Dudery, because they were the two who were very handy, who featured in the finishing. Everything else came from off the pace. And a lot of those horses who were handy, who, you know, reasonably well fancied, were very well beaten. The Nichols pair set off first and second, and they've ended up finishing something like 12th and 19th or something like that. Whereas Hallowen Dudery was always reasonably handy. The Yellow Clay is one that I'd be very keen on next season. Again, always up in the front rank, kept on well. For a place, and he had a fair old layoff before his previous run. I think there's an improvement to come in him, and he'll make a jumper, certainly.
Final word on Wednesday. No cross country. No cross country.
I walked out in it.
Was it bad?
Yeah.
Horrendous.
I walked it. I walked down this part of the track that they were talking about, and the ground was moving underneath you, and they were saying, why don't they run it on Friday? And I was thinking, well, the forecast suggests it won't be in the dry by Friday. The only thing possibly they could have done was if the BHA had the scope is run it on the main track as a chase rather than as a cross country race, but they don't have the scope to do that. So that's only a suggestion, maybe for thinking outside the box going forward.
Niche question, ask it anyway.
I think you had a lot of non-runners that they did that, by the way.
Possibly, I don't know. You're just looking for a reason. A lot of horses there, whatever.
Just give them a chance.
Because it's such a, the cross country, the way it's run, it's such a good prep for the Grand National for particularly for Gordons.
Exactly.
That a 3-mile 7 chase on the main track actually would not do the same job. But it's certainly, you don't want to have race, so you have to have some kind of backup.
Thinking or else, does it need to go to the first or last race? The long gaps definitely didn't help.
And of course you can't move races forward, because if you've published the race, if you say the Grand Annual is going to be run at 4:30 and you run it at 4:00 instead, that's it.
Yes or no, should the cross country go back to being a handicap?
I don't think it matters that much, but
it a limited handicap.
A limited handicap.
Okay.
I think
compressed.
Anything you want to sort of make a handicap, a compressed handicap, maybe not exactly the way they have limited handicaps here, but you'd have bottom weight of 11 stone and up to 12 stone or whatever you want a narrow band. It's not a championship race, so you don't need to have championship weights.
Commuer type thing, 1-4-5?
No. I would more 11-12 to 10-12.
Okay.
Let your top weight be whatever he is.
Yeah.
But 11-12 to 10-12.
Yeah,
or else you look at it that if you've ever won a grade one, you always carry 7 pounds. Things like that. Yep. There are ways of balancing it.
Framing those.
But it's not the worst offender at the festival in terms of field sizes. It's just that there are a lot of horses who would call themselves cross country specialists who've got little chance of winning that because they're coming up against top class horses.
Yeah. Okay, onwards we go to Thursday, kicking things off at the Turners Novices Chase, and English horses. I mean, what the hell? Rory, we had two of them here battling it out. They should be decent going forward, shouldn't they?
Yeah, 1-2-3 for the English. Yes. With Jello in third as well.
I met Dan Barber at Time for him. He said English racing is back on the basis of that result.
But in fairness, that was the best example of a novice chase at the festival. It was competitive on paper. You got a proper race. You know, the questions were asked. They got into a bit of a battle from the top of the hill, the top three. And then the big two then really forced, slugged it out from the second last. And you got a true result in the end. I thought it was a race where you, you know, if you wanted to advertise the Cheltenham Festival, you'd show that. It's a great example of it. And you ended up with proper, performances that you can say, yeah, these horses are good enough to win Grade Ones next season with normal improvement from year to year. Whereas they didn't have that much to prove. They've run to, I mean, Gaelic Warrior's probably run to the highest level of the novices this season, but he's kind of outclassed his opposition in the Oracle. This was a really good battle where the horses have had to prove they've got the ability to run to a high level, but also they got the ability to get involved in a race, in a battle where, you know, it's not a case of popping around. A lot of the races were run reasonably slowly and the questions weren't really asked of jumping, whereas they were in this race, and the front two are very good jumpers. I was a little bit concerned about Great Dawning early in the season. I thought he was a little bit straight-backed in his jumping, and I wasn't sure how well that would turn out, whereas Ginny's Destiny is a very, very sound jumper and has been from day one. But I thought Great Dawning matched Ginny's Destiny in the jumping this time. It's probably the jump at the last that's won him the race in the end. And we know he stays 3 miles, and you know they view him very much as a Gold Cup horse, and Dan Skelton might have gone for the longer race had the ground been good. So I think, yeah, you'd be positive about it. They're going different directions next season. Ginny's Destiny looks very much a Ryanair horse through and through in the mould of previous Paul Nicholls horses in that race, and a real Cheltenham specialist as well. And Grey Dawning will be heading towards the Gold Cup, which obviously will be a tougher path, but he's got scope, and they've always talked about him in glowing terms. Like, I don't think he shows anything at home, but they keep saying, get him on the track, and he just comes alive, and he did it again here.
You know the way life occasionally throws you like tricky puzzles to solve? So Fasal Vega is one of those, is he?
He is. He's just been very disappointing, and he absolutely blew out here, ran poorly, didn't jump well enough, and back to the drawing board.
His own work is obviously very good, is it?
It is, yeah, but that's not much good.
No.
Didn't see too many horses getting paid out in the gallops.
but where do you go from here? Like, what do you
think
do to
I
try
shall
and reinvent
most
it?
Definitely leave that up to WP Mullins. Okay. I'm not getting involved.
Okay, sitting on the fence.
WP Mullins might be asking somebody else about this one. He seems to be one of the few horses that he can't quite get his head around either. But
let's move on then. One of the feature races on day three of the Cheltenham Festival was indeed the Ryanair Chase. And on his day, Ruby, it just seems like Protectorat is quite a good horse.
I'd say they nailed it, the right race for him. Yep. Right race, right horse. Got a good toe off stage there, jumped very well for Harry Skelton. And I think on the ground, just saw it out better than Envoy Allen. Mm. On better ground, not so sure he would have. Mm. Thought Envoy Allen arrived at the right time to go at Protectorat. Thought it was a good ride from Harry Skelton as well. He waited when he got to Harry Cobden. He didn't commit before he got to the second last. He waited for Rachel Blackmore to arrive on his outside and propelled him forward. Good performance from Protectorat though. Two miles and five furlongs. Suited him. Suited his jumping. Suited the way he travels.
Also, he's been, in most of his races, he's ended up making the running and having to do his own donkey work over
further. Keen. Yeah.
And actually, he's really well suited by sitting behind a strong pace. Yeah.
Would you go along with the theory that maybe Dan Skelton has listened to the slagging he's been getting over the last couple of years when he had the kind of, he had to scratch the itch and go a bit early and maybe...
Harry. Dan did say that in an interview. He said Harry's found a bit of restraint.
Okay.
And I thought, well, fair enough. If he's going to mention it. He didn't criticise him at all. He said he's got a bit of restraint, and his riding was really good all week, whereas a couple years ago.
Yeah, but you have to make mistakes to
learn.
Yeah,
you have to make mistakes to learn, exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, you don't kick on down the hill at Cheltenham and steal Grade One races. You do in handicaps, but you need to make the mistakes to learn, as Ruby says, and his riding.
They have to hurt.
All round was excellent. And again, all the talk about Dan Skelton in the last week is about, you know, the handicaps. But what did he say? He sent, 11 horses to the festival, and he had 4 winners and a couple of places in there as well.
That's right, great.
Yeah, really, really good.
We're not ruling out Banbridge, just got stuck in the mud, possibly?
Yeah, surprised he ran, to be honest. And I was, the ground was worse this year than last year when he was pulled out because of it. But I suppose he didn't have a run through the winter because of the ground. He had the one run at Kempton. If you don't run at Cheltenham, your season's almost a write-off. You might as well take one chance. He's fresh enough now to go to Aintree, and Aintree would suit him. But again, it's the same old problem, you know. He needs the ground to dry out, and we've had such a wet winter and early spring that it's a bit of a question mark. So I understand why they ran. And to be honest, I'd bailed out of that position because I was convinced the ground was going to be very soft anyway and reinvested. So I wasn't quite as mad as I might have been.
Have you been in that position before, Ruby, where maybe things don't suit, but the external pressures are like... Owner has always starts run.
Not external pressures. You're looking at Banbridge. So where is he going to run if he doesn't run last Thursday? His next race is not for 4 weeks until Aintree.
Yeah.
And so here, roll the dice. Yeah. You know,
might handle it.
They might go slow. Mm. Some of the others mightn't handle it. I mean, if we knew the answer, so no one would ever run.
And of course, they'd won with the horses didn't want soft ground on the Tuesday.
Exactly.
So, you know, you think, well, and again, I think last year, after the result of the Turners, they might have been thinking, maybe should have run him there. Could have won. So I can see why they took the chance this year, but there you go. Didn't work out. He didn't have a terribly hard race in the end. When he was beaten, he was given a fairly easy time.
Righto, the other feature race on day three of the Cheltenham Festival was indeed the Paddy Power Stairs Hurdle, and Tiupu was back like defeat was out of the question, Ruby. Gordon Elliott probably getting a bit twitchy at that stage. No winner, hitting the crossbar plenty, but Tiupu got the job done.
Yeah, but that's a hitting the crossbar. His horse were running really well. They just weren't quite good enough. And Tiupu was always in a good position. Quick and nicely, jumped nicely. I probably doubted him. I wasn't convinced about him at the price, but you were only halfway and you were thinking, God, he's the one you want to be on. Yeah. They didn't go as hard as I thought they'd go. Florian Porter went to the front after about 5-6 furlongs, and again, you know, they didn't follow him, and he came back to the field quite easily, and he's run a cracking race.
He has,
good call by Gavin Cromwell as to where to run him. But Tiupu was the best horse, and when you looked at him and watched him winning, you're kind of thinking, yeah, he could win a couple of those.
He could. I mean, he was, if you want to be critical, he was really well served by the run of the race, whereas a few of the stayers. As a horse who's got 2.5 mile speed, the fact that Florian Porter, I was left watching Florian Porter 2 years ago under Danny, where he's managed to, he slowed it down at halfway and got them on a bit of a string in behind. And Tiupu is the one horse with the speed to be able to come out of the pack and challenge him. And that's got the job done. Florian Porter was, again, was a nice little result for me, Antipost, as well. As I said, when he went 50-1 with Paddy when Gavin said he would definitely run the National Hunt Chase. And I'm a firm believer that if you keep a horse in two races and you say he's definitely running in one and you're not taking him out, he still might run there. So at 50-1, I had a few bob on, but I also included him. It's, you know, there were the vibes a few weeks before Cheltenham were sounding like there was a fair chance of him running on the stairs, and he was still a good price, and I threw him in the old multiple to get a couple of bobs, so I was pleased with that.
Mare's Novice Rory, brighter days ahead. A big fan.
I had to get the positives in.
before the negatives came. Bad following good here. Things didn't really go to plan. She was keen and free.
Well, I think this is a little bit of jockey error. No, I don't want to knock the winner. The winner has done it nicely. She's been very impressive in lesser company this season. She showed a lot of promise in bumpers last year. She's won Turning Handsprings at Taunton in a couple of ordinary races, and she looks a decent mare. So I don't want to knock Golden Ace at all. But Jack has ridden the race as if he's got one horse to beat, and he's basically riding to get that horse beat rather than just looking to win the race himself. Brighter Days Ahead stays well. She's won over 2.5 miles last time out. We know that, you know, in a strongly run race, she's the likeliest winner, but it ends up being not a strongly run race. It wasn't a typical Jigginstown ride either. He wasn't wide in the track and handy. He was handy enough, but he was always looking to his inside to Willie's mare. And I'm not sure that he'd necessarily have won the race anyway. As I said, I don't want to knock the winner, but I think he concentrated too much on one horse and didn't ride his mare to the best of her ability. He rode her as if she was in a match race, and that hasn't worked out in the end.
Would you look at changing the penalty structure here just to make it a little bit like less like mares dodging each other, particularly in the UK through the season? Because they're avoiding each other in listed company.
They are a little bit, yeah. And both Dice Arenos didn't run in the end. She was lame in the morning, and she's deliberately running in uncompetitive races to get in there. But the problem is, if you change the penalty, you're trying to turn it into grade one. It's either a grade one or it's not a grade one. If it's a grade two, then you have then you have.
But that was the uncertainty of it too. So you're saying that's the problem. So you're changing the penalty structure to get them to clash earlier in the year. But if they crash twice earlier in the year, you already know, the result, but you're less likely to try and take someone on that's already beaten you twice. So the more you can keep them apart, the more clashes you have come Cheltenham. That's a lot of the problem.
So yeah, I don't have a massive problem with the penalty structure. And of course, you basically make a choice. You run your horse in races that it's going to win easily against inferior opposition, and you run the risk that they're not tough enough when they come to the big day, or you run them in graded company and you know how good they are and you know they're tough enough to win, but you're giving weight away, and that's an uncertainty as well. So you take your choice.
What's the debrief on Jade DeGrugy?
Again, slowly run race, looked like she wanted a bit further. And I'd say, yeah, I agree with Rory. I'd say Jack would probably like another go. Paul said to me he'd like another go as well. But look, you play your cards the way you play them. And
yeah, and she's got stuck on the far side because of what's always, happened as well.
You don't always maximise the hand you have, but that's tactics.
Yeah.
Elsewhere Thursday, Mon Morale, Shake 'em up, Parry. I know the way you're thinking, big punt. Any of you want a word on any
Shake
of those?
Shake 'em up, Parry was good to watch. I know the way you're thinking. Got a fantastic ride, but God knows what he had in hand.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Mon Morale got a fabulous ride too from the back, Harry Cobden. I thought that was a really well-timed ride.
Yes, and he's not been the easiest horse to catch, right? He had a big reputation. He bolted up at entry as a juvenile, and they were talking about champion hurdles with him, and he's been hard to get a handle on since then. But I must say, I did not have him down as a horse for that trip, but he showed that he got it on the day. The fact that he had the tactical speed there was probably important. And as you said, a really good ride. I know the way you're thinking, did plenty wrong in the very early stage. Yeah. He ballooned the first two fences. He's actually set off, as they've left the tape, he's probably first on the inside as they go to the first fence. And he's disputing last after two fences. We've seen that before in the race a few years ago with Mount Ida.
Yes.
Who was a million after jumping three fences and came through to win. And that's the thing about the Kim Muir, because of the quality of the race. If you've got a horse who's got a load of talent and you've got a top-class jockey, you can make your ground mid-race past moderate enough horses. And he's looked a very impressive winner in the end. But again, he's better than a 145 horses. I was surprised he got into the race. I thought the handicap was lenient on him. And of course, his form in Grade 1 novice chases looked an awful lot better before he lined up anyway. But for a horse to go off at 13-8 in a race like the Kim Muir, something slightly wrong there. Again, that should be a really open race for openly campaigned horses. And that, I didn't think, it didn't spoil the race. It still made it interesting. But, you know, the fact that you have one horse who's absolutely cornering the market and dominating the betting and the race itself is not great for everybody else who's involved.
Wednesday and Thursday done and dusted. Friday coming at you after this short break.
Great result.
Thanks, Peter. Coming up, we have league action live on Friday night, followed by three more games live on Saturday, then two more massive games live on Sunday. And don't forget, league action live on Monday night. Then it's over to Europe for the big one, live on Tuesday. Then the even bigger one, live on Wednesday. Then it's the other European.
Sometimes a break isn't a bad idea. So, if ever you want to take time out from betting, use Paddy Power's Take a Break tool to pause your account. Paddy Power.
Welcome back. The fourth and final day of the Cheltenham Festival 2024 to review in the company of Rory DeLargin and Ruby Walsh. We're kicking things off with the Triumph Hurdle. And in fairness to you, Ruby, you've been singing and dancing about Majbur all year. A fine type of horse, not your typical Triumph Hurdle little runt of a yoke.
Yeah, look, that's what he was. I doubt I tipped him. I most definitely didn't have anything on him, but he was the horse looking at them all that you would think, wow, he'd be a lovely chaser, he could be a grand horse in time. And he grounded out to be Cargese. Salver was a good third. I thought a couple of willies were disappointing myself. Stormheart ran below, Bunting ran below. But look, Majborough, yeah, he's a fine big specimen and he's going to be a lovely chaser. Whether that's next season or the season after, it remains to be seen.
Okay, so one or two out the back, maybe keep an eye out for the big four-year-old handicap in the stall, maybe?
I wouldn't have thought so. I just thought even by now they'd be too high for that, but I just thought a couple of them didn't run up to what they could.
No. Okay. Let's move on, Rory. Talk about the County Hurdle. Absurd. Another Paul Townend masterclass.
Yeah, funny old race, the County, and it's not a race that that needs a lot of analysis because it got very messy, but it suited Absurd. But he still needed to have balls of steel to ride him the way that Paul did, which suits, you know, he didn't want to be among horses because his jumping is very novice. He's still very lightly raced as a hurdler. Not too lightly raced to get into the race, but clearly very, very classy. Winning the Ebor last year, so doing a sea pigeon on that front. Although Sea Pigeon, I think, was already proven champion hurdle class before he won his Ebor. And yeah, his jumping wasn't brilliant. But again, the way you had to ride him, you either had to go out in the front to let him see his hurdles on his own, or ride him out the back so he could see the hurdles. And then you got to have an awful lot of confidence that you can ride him like that and then come through late in the day. The way the race panned out was ideal. The way the race cut up also was ideal. I think 17 runners in the end?
Yeah, there was seven non-runners, I think. Yeah. Thereabouts, no gallop. Then everyone gets racing away from the second last, and it kind of splits into a narrow head formation. Yeah. And Paul's able to pick his lines. It was great to watch, but he was riding the fastest horse, and it was an absolute dash, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So absolutely him ideally. And of course, you know, there'd be plenty of hard luck stories in a race like this with a full field, but the fact that you had the non-runners meant the spaces, the gaps were there for him, and he's taken them. And it'll be interesting to see what he does in the next year, because obviously he ran very well in the Melbourne Cup. Don't think he quite stayed too much. I mean, I think he could win a Melbourne Cup, but I think that there's a notion that if you're ridden very if you're a horse that you think is going to stay and you're ridden very prominently there, should get an advantage. But the way races are run in Australia means it does suit the horses who can show a turn of foot even at 2 miles from off the pace. So I think although he looked like he didn't get home, if he was ridden more circumspectly on that and asked to come from behind again, he actually could maybe win a Melbourne Cup. So they might want to go and do that again. I mean, he could turn into a champion hurdle horse if he learns to jump, but I don't think you're either a brilliant jumper of a hurdle if you're going to be a champion hurdle horse or you're not. And I think he probably doesn't bridge that gap, even though he's got the class to do it. But there's lots of stuff to do with him on the flat. He's not had that much racing since he's joined Willie from France. So he's second of Auteur at Royal Ascot. I can see him go back to Royal Ascot again, you know. A lot of money available there. And he's a horse that you'd love to have an interest in.
Yeah, loads of options, Ruby. Obviously a very talented horse. What do you think the future holds for him?
I'd imagine he'll go back to Australia.
Okay.
Now, he only qualified for the Melbourne Cup.
Do you get
last
to go
year.
On that junket now? Do you just go down and... No! You will be there, though. I'd say you'll try your best.
I'll try my best, anyway.
Are you pitching an idea to producer Mark?
I have, but sure, I might as well be talking to the wall. he qualified through winning the Ebor.
Yeah.
So he would have to get black type form on the flat this summer to get himself in.
Vintage Grapstakes.
Vintage Grapstakes, like Saffle Bags.
Three runners in the Vintage Grapstakes.
Yeah, I know, but it is there.
You've got to win a listed race or be placed in Group 3.
So it is there that he would have to. That's how he ended up there last year, because of winning the Melbourne Cup. Or Ebor.
Yeah. Okay. Quick word on Paul Townend, who had the week of his life.
Super week.
Cut him, he bleeds confidence. He's just like, doesn't, no panic
that's
whatsoever.
And a lot of big decisions are not just big decisions, but tough decisions. Like, he didn't leave one behind either.
No.
He didn't come out there thinking I rode the wrong one there. It's just a great week for him, but he's a brilliant rider and it doesn't affect him.
How would you describe him as a jockey? Is he a stylish kind of?
He is that
cool,
careful in the flat, very stylish, great seat, good hands. He's confident, good fella, but he's a good person. Yeah. He's the same. Like, he started him when he was 15, and all right, he's grown from a boy into a man, but he hasn't changed very much, manners or mannerisms or no ego, no side to him. Good fella.
And the cherry on top for Paul Townend came in the feature race at day four of the Cheltenham Festival with Gallop and Deschamps in the second Gold Cup.
And a much different race to the race last year. Much different ride, but ultimately the same result. And it was a good ride. Like, my heart was in my mouth now watching Fast or Slow from the fourth last all the way down to the home turn, thinking, where are you going to go? How does Paul get by you, go to you? I could see Jerry Gallon coming. You're looking at... was long pressing in front on the inside. You're thinking, Jesus, where do you go now? But like, it just worked out, and good jump at the second last, brilliant jump at the last, got himself to the line. A very good horse. Not as flashy maybe as last year's performance.
No.
A bit more workmanlike, but I'd say with the ground and the season he's had, it was good to see him winning.
In a situation like that with a loose horse, is there anything you as a jockey can do? Obviously, you can't ride the loose horse, but can you get up and kind of intimidate them away from you?
Or I suppose you going at it sounds like the wrong thing to say, but like when they jumped the third last, it looked like Fast or Slow was going to drift wide. Yeah. So Paul switched in, but almost then straight away, Fast or Slow went back to long press. So Paul had to come to the other side. You just don't want to get into a race with that horse where that horse decides, I'm going to keep beating you and takes you off.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? So you kind of have to wait till the loose horse decides what he's going to do. And you're second guessing.
Mm. Rory, Paul Townend equaling the record number of Gold Cups for a rider now, with bagging his fourth with Gallop and Deschamps. A quick word on horse and jockey.
Yeah, it was, as Ruby said, it wasn't as flashy a win as last year, but he put up the flashy performance at Christmas.
Yeah.
His win in the Savills Chase was exceptional. Where he beat the Gold Cup second by a lot further, was 22 lengths or so on the day. So, you know, he's put on one of those stellar performances to show exactly how good he was. And then, you know, the Gold Cup was a case of getting the job done. It was a great race to watch. It almost always is. It kept you on the edge of your seat, really, didn't it? I needed Cormac Rambler to hit the frame for Cheltenham to be a success for me at that stage. So I was delighted with that. And that worked out. From that point of view, that worked out perfectly to script. You knew he was going to sit at the back and just pass horses as they were beaten. And there was a case of, could he find more from the last? He actually, the old head came up in the air halfway up the running and he finished a bit tired. But that was nice to see. And I'd say it sets him up nicely for the National. But obviously, you don't have an easy race in the Gold Cup, and plenty of horses have looked to give themselves a big chance in the National, only to run flat. So we'll see what he does. But yeah, Gallop and Deschamps has done it really well. Paul's ridden brilliantly all week. I don't want to knock Jack Kennedy again, but if you compare the riding of the two of them all week, Jack just didn't quite have the confidence. He was going for gaps that weren't always there, and those split second decisions always went Paul's way because he was just full of confidence because he's been riding winners regularly all season, and Jack's been a little bit stop start in the last couple of years, obviously for reasons that we're aware of. But he's a very, very classy rider, and his next year maybe he'll be coming in full of confidence and you'll get a raft of winners for Gordon. Whereas with a lot of, seconds and thirds that, with a little bit of better luck, things might have gone differently. But when you're riding without confidence, those split second decisions tend to go your way. And when you're riding, you're lacking the confidence, then it tends to be the other side of the coin. But great to see that all week from Paul. And you can't beat a back-to-back Gold Cup winner. We seem to wait... a generation for one, and now they're coming along every few years. Yeah,
all coming together. Very good. A very impressive performance from Gallop and Deschamps, and our Cheltenham fan zone in the Camden last Friday. The crowd there really enjoyed it. I think we're going to show you a clip of that now, jumping the last and going on to win a second Gold Cup. Very good. The crowd enjoyed that very much. Ruby, a quick word on a few of the others. Jerick Lom ran a blinder, and Cormac Rambler, as Rory mentioned, stayed on quite well. Would you see that as a good prep?
I felt sorry for JJ Slevin and Martin Brazel. Fast and Slow didn't do a whole pile wrong, but just one of those things. Get your body position forward on landing from a jump, as you would be, but the horse nods and you're left sitting in midair, yeah, and off you come easier than you'd like. So felt sorry for them and Sean Mulrain. It can happen anywhere, any day, but it's a dose when it happens in a big race like that. So I did feel sorry for them. But yeah, I thought they were the most likely ones. I thought Galloping, Fast or Slow, Corey Cranmer and Jerry Calam, they were the four to me, and the three of them were...
Yeah, and Lumpress has run really well. I don't think he quite stays 3.25 miles.
Probably didn't.
But he's run an absolutely brilliant race until the last fence, and then just got tired from there.
Fair.
the Albert Bartlett, as it often does, threw up a funny result. Stellar Story won the Albert Bartlett Ruby. Reading Tommy Wrong well back didn't really fire.
Blew out, ran absolutely stink. Dancing City was the best of Willie's, finished in third. But Reading Tommy Wrong was well beaten at the top of the hill. High Class Hero didn't run much better. He was a bit keen. But Stellar Story, great winner for Sam Ewing.
I felt sorry,
but the jukebox man did everything right.
For
Keelan Woods, and just got nabbed. He got tight to the last. Stellar Story pinged it and was a whisker from nodding over the height he got behind. But a good performance from him. And I thought Dancing City ran the best of Willie's. But yeah, look, it keeps throwing it up, doesn't it? Shock winners.
The race that's for Hunter Chasers, not the Fox Hunters. Rory was won by Cine Nominee, who's put up by Frank Hickey, Anthony Post, interestingly. And it's another good result in terms of the Corinthian spirit of the
indeed,
race.
Indeed, indeed. All the Hunter Chase experts seem to be keen on Cine Nominee. In the last week before the race, the two that I follow on Twitter both put it up independently at 16s. He's a horse who'd been very impressive early in the season at Weatherby. It was kind of not the easiest to get a handle on his form until fairly recently. But he's a nice type, good old fashioned hunter chaser, running in the same colours as Last Option, who Fiona Needham rode to win the race. And when she did, she was wearing the silks were about 60 years old. They weren't silks; it was a proper old fashioned pullover, darned at the elbows, that had been on the go for ages. So it's nice to see they had a new set of colours for this one. But yeah, he looks a horse to follow in that sphere for a couple of years. He's a good sort.
Ruby, the Mrs. Paddy Power Mare's Chase all change at the top of the market overnight and in the morning. Dino Blue and Limerick
all change with the ground, wasn't it?
Yeah,
and rode into Limerick Lace, who had the stamina placed in the Tritone, wasn't she?
Yeah, she wasn't.
They rode into the stamina laden mare over the classy one, and I must say, going to the last, I didn't know which way it was going to go. I thought Dinah Blue was coming to pick off Limerick Lace, but Limerick Lace possibly outstayed her, and it was a great week for Limerick Lace's dam. She had two runners.
Two winners.
I know the way you're thinking, so. Yeah. Great week for her.
Yeah, if you could find a mare like her, you'd be laughing.
I must say, I was a little bit negative about her going in, because when she was third in the Troy Town, she looked
swished her tail.
She looked like the winner. Yeah. She swished her tail, and she swished her tail last year in the Webster Cup. She looked like winning, and I thought, I'm not sure I'd really want her up the hill, but she got herself in front.
Yeah.
In the first place, I'd rather she was in front, jumping the last, than trying to come from behind.
Yeah. Okay.
But she's done it nicely in the end. And of course, my auntie Post, it was the stable mate who was a non runner in the morning.
Right. So
there you go.
Good things happen to good people.
Final
race of the festival, Martin Pipe, Better Days Ahead, giving Gordon Elliott a third winner and a good ride from young master Danny Gilligan. Anything else in behind catching your eye, Rory?
Other horse, What's Up Darling, is that it?
Yeah.
I thought that ran, I mean, I liked that in the race. I thought it ran really well. Of course, on its previous start, I was trying to give a stone away to Lantry Lady in the Red Mills Trial at Gore, and I think that's one to keep an eye on next season. We'll jump the fence, certainly. And of course, the Martin Pipe, the good thing with this race is the type of horse that run in it, they tend to be a rich source of winners over fences the following season as well.
Okay. Ruby, anything you'd like to say just to get off your chest, or do you want to wish anyone a happy birthday or anything like that? No.
Whose birthday is it?
I don't know. You're just like, this is your.
I feel like I'm under pressure.
You know?
I forget someone's birthday.
Is this the hardest question about? No, you do. Just anything you'd like to say about the 2024 Cheltenham Festival?
19th of March. It's nobody's birthday.
It's not a trick question. It's just like, if you'd like to say.
Are you forgetting something?
I know, I didn't. Am I? Did I have a script today?
No. Well, you have a running order, but you obviously didn't read it anyway. Mark will give out to you after this anyway. Rory, anything else? Any of the other races? Any eye catchers that didn't get a chance to mention?
No, I've mentioned the one. I mean, I think you can go through some of those races again, and you'll find more eye catchers. But there were a lot of races where, in 20 runner races, you'd have found a lot more hard luck stories. There weren't many hard luck stories in a lot of races this season, so I thought it was a lot easier to unpick than some years, and maybe less eye catching ones as a result. But a few of those races, you know, the likes of the Martin Pipe, the likes of the Champion Bumper. Yeah. They're the ones worth rewinding and looking for promise in behind.
I'd say I think the soft ground definitely played to a lot of the results being the way they should be, being really nothing just screamed I was unlucky.
Yeah. Okay, very good. Before we wrap up, the good people at Paddy Power, I believe, do indeed have anti-post betting on the majority of the grade ones at the 2025 Cheltenham Festival. So, in the spirit of the game, I'll ask you for two horses each.
To put in
a long range lucky 15.
Lucky 15, two for
the,
each.
For the Cheltenham Festival grade ones, obviously. And you can put in a short ad break here if you want to give them a chance.
Slade Steel.
For the?
Arkle.
Okay.
Oh, I'd say Turners.
Jesus.
That's the problem you have with that.
We're in the one lucky 15 here, so if you want to put them in the Turners, put them in the Turners.
Well, yeah. And then you have one non-runner and one. I'll throw an outsider in who I put up this season, but he ended up missing most of the campaign. Addex Des Obo for next year's Champion Chess.
Champion Chess.
Now with Nicky Henderson. He moves to
Gary Moore. Gary Moore, yeah.
He was third in the Tingle Creek, and he moved from Gary Moore to Nicky Henderson afterwards, but picked up an injury and was scratched for the remainder of the season in December.
So Slade Steel and the Arkle or Turners? You can't have both.
Oh, I think Turners.
Turners. Addex Des Obo and the Greenwater Champion Chess. Two more.
Jade de Grugy in the Mayor's Hurdle.
Jade de Grugy, Mayor's Hurdle. Okay, right.
That's a fair one. Brighter days ahead in the Mayor's Chase.
There you go. Very good. They're happy now.
That's creative thinking.
That was very good. I enjoyed that. You worked it out together. Excellent. Righto. Thank you very much for your company. My thanks to Rory DeLargy and Ruby Walsh. We hope you enjoyed the show and indeed the whole Cheltenham Countdown series. Make sure you're subscribed to the Paddy Power Racing YouTube channel to pick up on all the racing content coming up to your way in the run up to Aintree and onwards through Punchestown and into the flat season. Make sure if you're having a bet any week, make sure to always do so responsibly. Ruby and Rory are back on their weekly slot on the From the Horse's Mouth podcast, giving you all the winners on ITV Racing. And on that podcast feed, you'll also have Fridays with Fran, giving you a few winners and what remains of Dundalk before the lights are switched off and the turf gets underway in earnest. I've been Tom Nugent. This has been the Cheltenham Festival 2024 review. Good luck.